Okay, and we're back. And back with us for the next 2 hours is one of the most interesting gentlemen I've ever had the pleasure of having on this program, a true historian, Harry Cooper, whose organization is the world's foremost, largest outfit dealing with the complete history of the German U-boat fleets and their operations in World War II and much beyond that, the American naval submarines as well. This is an organization that many people have an interest in, even if they didn't serve in those branches of service. They're interested in history as it really happened. The organization, of course, is Shark Hunters, and Harry has been with us on a number of occasions. We've gone on patrol with him on trips, and we have certainly explored some fascinating material, to put it mildly. We're going to do that again tonight. Some weeks ago, Harry was on the program, and we did a lengthy expose of what, in all probability, actually happened to Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun after the war's end. We're going to spend some more time on that tonight. There is a film, a documentary out now, obviously predicated and based, if not extracted in nearly whole cloth, from Harry Cooper's own work, a book that was published over 20 years ago now, detailing what, again, in all likelihood, happened to Adolf Hitler. All the signs are there, all the earmarks, all the historical landmarks, references. There are people down in Argentina who were there, who claim to have had contact with him, who knew him, and all the rest of it. It's just a fascinating story. But I want to try and make darn sure that we credit the man who really put this together, and it is Harry Cooper, not the people who made this documentary that's running around now. So with that, let me bring on our friend, Harry Cooper of Shark Hunters. Hello, Harry. Welcome back.
Well, good to be back, Jeff. Good evening.
Good evening to you. How are things at Shark Hunters?
Oh, we're doing well. We're getting ready to go back to Germany on our southern patrol, which is September. We go there, we visit historic sites, and we also take part in the Ulrichsberg Memorial, in which the old veterans remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform they were wearing. And it's been going on since shortly after World War I, and there are hundreds and hundreds of veterans who come out. It's their show. We visit with them. We're the guests of honor. And there are some veterans from the U-boat Waffe, more veterans from the Luftwaffe, but the great majority are from the Waffen-SS, which anybody who has studied World War II can tell you were about the toughest combat fighters in the war.
I think without question.
Yeah. We do this every year, and as I say, we're full for this year, but if any of your listeners want to be put on the roster to get the information when it comes out for next year, all they have to do is send us an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net, and we'll contact them as soon as the next, all our patrols, and if they want to come with us, they're welcome. If not, well.
Well, it's a wonderful way to experience real history, not the garbage they serve up in the textbooks nowadays.
Right, and to meet the people who are there. We have a lot of American veterans going over with us.
I'll bet.
And they meet the former enemy, and they become drinking buddies.
Yeah, in about 2 seconds. How many are you taking this time?
Well, before
is that classified?
Barack Obama.
Oh.
Before Barack Obama, we would
who?
Think, yeah, Barry. We would limit it to 40 people. But since Barack Obama, and most people don't have a lot of money, we're down to about a dozen each time. But next year, we are expecting it to be re-emerging. So maximum 40.
Good. Okay. Sharkhunters.com is the website. Really easy to remember. Sharkhunters.com. Now, I mentioned that this documentary is running around and is getting notice in some of the mainstream media as a shocking new historical revelation.
Shocking new, yeah, right.
Yeah, well, they got your book. When was the book published, and how much work went into that book, and how did you come across the information that really led you to the conclusions, which are all virtually irrefutable, that Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun were taken out of the bunker and moved out of Berlin in what we think might have been a float plane, and then submarined down to Argentina.
Right. Well, what got me started in the U-boat history was when I was a yacht bum on my boat in the Bahamas. I had sold my race car. I was a Grand National stock car racer and was bouncing around the Bahamas and ran into a small island that had allegedly provided fresh water and food for the German, for a couple of German U-boats. Got me studying it. And then I started Shark Hunters in February of 1983. A fellow joined in 1985, Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco from Spain. And it turned out he was an agent. He worked for the Abwehr, which was the German Secret Service, until Admiral Canaris got convicted of knowing about the plot to blow Hitler up and didn't bother to tell the boss, so mm-hmm. they hanged him and disbanded the Abwehr. Mm-hmm. And so this guy switched over to the Sicherheitsdienst of the SS. He was in the bunker at the end of the war for the last few months prior to the end of the war.
Ah, just remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he saw Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun forcibly drugged under orders of Martin Bormann and hauled out of the bunker. And he sent me this story in 1985. Excuse me. It was a 114-page long letter, typewritten, single-spaced. So that became our book. But before it was a book, we ran it in serial form in our monthly magazine. Then we turned it into a book. The first printing came out just about 10 years ago, and it was done in a combined effort with my friend Willis Carto,
mm-hmm.
who is
mm-hmm.
the publisher of the Barnes Review and the America Free Press. And we introduced it at a symposium he had, and so I had a half an hour to speak about it. And Well, that's what I had at that time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. I got to the end and I wrapped it up. I said, "So here is absolute proof that Hitler did not die in the bunker." And somewhere in the audience, some guy stood up and yelled out, "Oh, thank God for that!" Said, "Well, okay, whatever you say, pal." Well, then we reissued the book. I think it's 6-7 years ago,
uh-huh.
and it's the same text, but we put in a lot of photos plus some of the FBI and CIA reports, and that's the funny thing. We have hundreds of reports from the FBI and the CIA all saying that they knew Hitler got out. This was in 1945, these reports came out.
Wow.
Saying that they knew Hitler got out, and so that's what got us going on that. The book is now ready for, you know, we keep a stock of it here, and we sell it to anybody who wants it.
Okay, and they contact Shark Hunters, sharkhunters.com.
Right.
And what's the formal title they should ask for?
Escape from the Bunker.
That's it, okay.
All yeah, right. you just go to the website, sharkhunters.com, and click on the part that says books.
Well, it couldn't get any easier than that. Now, this, again, is essentially the actual eyewitness description of what it was like in the bunker and what happened to Hitler. Hitler didn't want to leave, obviously. He wanted to die there. That's
correct. He was kind of beat up, broken, spirited, etc.
Sure.
And Bormann was the guy who wanted to keep the movement alive, and from all indication, he did, because Don Angel continued to work for the Reich in Europe after the end of the war, because it just didn't evaporate when the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
And so Martin Bormann, he was put in contact with Bormann, and he taught Bormann how to speak Argentine Spanish, which is very different. And then Bormann said, "Come on, we're leaving." And, well, you guys read it in the book, but they got onto a small fishing boat in Villa Garcia, which is where lots of people left from after
uh-huh.
the war, for two
uh-huh.
years after the war.
Huh.
So Villa Garcia is just upriver from Vigo, Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And then they chugged out in this old fishing smack in the middle of the night, and there was a U-boat waiting for him, and they went down to Argentina, and he dropped off Borman and several people got off down there. Don Angel came back. Then he moved to Mexico City as a newspaper guy, and but was still working for the Reich. And in 1952, he was given orders to go get on an airplane and don't ask questions. And the airplane flew south, 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 and it was all heavy, heavy snow. And in his book, in the book, Don Angel said that they landed in Antarctica. Either he was mistaken or it was deliberate misinformation, because it was in a little town called San Carlos de Bariloche,
yeah,
in southern Patagonia, over on the west side at the foothills of the Andes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look closely at the description of the buildings, etc., in the little compound where he landed, that is the estate where Hitler lived until 1955, and we visited there twice, and we're going back again in January.
That was the Mercedes estate?
Yep, yep. It was built with Mercedes money,
uh-huh,
in the closing days of the war, and nobody from Mercedes ever lived there. And to the best of our knowledge, nobody lived there except Hitler from 1945 till 1955, when he and Eva Braun had to leave because the place was discovered as a tourist attraction.
Mm-hmm.
It's 700 miles roughly southwest of Buenos Aires, and back in the 40s and 50s, I mean, it could have been on the backside of the moon because it was next to impossible to get there.
Yeah, perfect, perfect.
And between Buenos Aires and there, there's not a damn thing but flat. The Pampas, we take a bus sometimes up to Cordova, 400 miles. You look out the window, and you look out the window an hour later, and it looks the same. 2 hours later, it looks the same. Nothing
but no
flat,
hills.
Flat, flat, yeah.
Wow.
So, Don Angel was keeping a file on two children in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
When you say keeping a file, what do you mean by that?
Checking
in on them occasionally? And...
Well, I don't know if he was actually face-to-face with them, but he was checking to make sure that they were getting schooled properly, and and he was taking pictures of them. And the young boy's name was Adolfo, and the young girl's name was Stern, which is the German word for star. We have no link between them and Hitler at all, except supposition. But he was ordered to bring that file down there, which he did, and...
That was what this flight was about.
That's correct.
That he claims landed in Antarctica. Clearly a misdirection, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Well,
spies do that.
Thing. Yeah, sure.
They lie.
Of course.
That's what spies do.
Gosh.
But the next morning, after he got refreshed and everything down there, he was ordered to hand the file, go in the room over there and hand the file to the Führer. And he said, "What do you mean when you say the Führer?" And the SS colonel that he was talking to said, "What do you mean? There's only one Führer." And he went in and met with Hitler. And that was in 1952, August, I believe.
Now, you talked to Don Angel.
No, we wrote.
Okay, just wrote.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of letters from him. And back and forth, but I've also, we've got this 114-page long typewritten document that became the book.
He passed?
Yes. Darn near 10 years ago, I think.
I wish we could have gotten him on the program. Not that a spy would go on a program like this.
Well,
but.
no, probably not, but one of our members, the guy who put us in contact with Don Angel, did actually meet with him and speak with him. That was 1984. Our member put us in contact with him. Our member's name was Robert Wilcox, and he's a professional writer. He wrote a book called Trading with the Enemy. I'm sorry. He wrote Japan's Secret War. That's what it was. And that's how he met Don Angel, because in the early part of the war, Don Angel was working for the Japanese in the Toe spy ring, which means the eastern spy ring, and then he transferred over to the Abwehr.
Okay, a question for you. Did Don Angel write about his meeting with Hitler in 53 when he took that file on the two children who were being raised in New Mexico? Did he talk about that meeting?
Hey, he wrote about it in the letter. It was 1952, not 53. Anyhow, yeah, that was in that 114-page long letter, which became the book.
These children would have been approximately how old?
He said they were young children, so I'm guessing somewhere in the area of 6, 7, 8 years old.
Okay,
I'm going to have to read my own book again.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I mean, what you're suggesting here is obviously extraordinary, to put it mildly. He reported that the children were doing well.
Yeah.
The boy's name was Adolfo. The girl's name was Star.
Right.
Stern.
Yeah.
What in the world would Adolf and Ava, or Eva, have an interest in these two children for? What's your guess?
Well, the obvious guess would be maybe it was their kids, but it merely, what we used to call back when I had an honest job, when I worked in the industry, we'd call it a wag, a wild-ass guess.
Uh-huh.
Not even a swag, which is a scientific wild-ass guess. No, that's what you would assume.
Well, this is extraordinary. To hide a pregnancy is not easy, and to get two little children out of war's end Germany would have been certainly doable. They obviously weren't in Berlin. The parents, if Adolf and Eva were the... Ava or Eva? What's the formal pronunciation?
In German, it's Ava.
Okay. We'll stick
Ava
with the German.
Ava Braun. Yeah, Ava Braun.
All right. If Adolf and Ava had two children...
That's an assumption.
Of course. They would have been the right age, these kids, and the interest shown obviously was at coming from an extremely high emotional level, from what I gather. And they were really concerned with these kids.
Right.
Could it have happened in 43, 44 that Ava Braun had a child and then another child? Does history allow for that in the pictures and the reports we have about that?
Pure speculation. I can't answer that.
Uh-huh.
But as for getting them out from war's end until 2 years later, which is middle 47, thousands got out.
Yes, of course.
South America, I jokingly say I can't speak Spanish, but I get along fine using German in certain little towns in Argentina.
Mm-hmm. One wonders if indeed they were their children, or the children of someone they were very close to, in either case, why in America? Why not having them live in Argentina somewhere, where they could go visit them occasionally?
I don't know.
That's another one, see?
Yeah,
Don Angel
something.
didn't hint about anything like that.
Nope. He just said that he kept files on them, took pictures of them, and handed the file to Hitler in August of 1952, and that is all he would say about it.
We'll assume that Hitler no longer had the mustache. We did have the one picture, which appears to be him.
Yeah, the old man. And
the
Don
man.
Angel did say that he had shaved off the mustache.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When he saw him in 52.
Did anyone suggest that Hitler had any further role as a leader in any remnants of the Reich?
No, no. He was quietly living out his life in Argentina. Bormann had taken over. Bormann had the codes to all the secret bank accounts, and he brought over a bunch of currency and valuables like gold and silver. And he and Juan Perón set up bank accounts together. And it's interesting that in 1945, when the war ended, Juan Perón was a colonel with no money and no land, and a year later he was a multi-zillionaire who had bought his way to the presidency of Argentina. Where did he get the money? I think we know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he was very pro a Nazi, and I hate to use that term. It's very pejorative.
Well,
but
it's fine.
Pro the Reich.
He was pro-German.
Yeah, and the German spy service was just flourishing like gangbusters down in South America, and the headquarters for all the German spy agencies in South America was in Buenos Aires. And they were doing so well, South America was pretty heavily pro-Axis. And I think I mentioned once before on your show that Walt Disney came out with a nice propaganda movie toward the end of the war called Three Amigos. And it
I remember that, sure.
Right. It starred Donald Duck, Goofy, and a fancy-colored parrot by the name of Jose Carioca.
A Latino parrot.
Yeah, character. Exactly, to show that North America and South America were all buddies.
Right.
Argentina only declared war against Germany under intense pressure from the USA 2 weeks before Germany surrendered. So it seemed like it was kind of superficial.
Okay. What do we know, if anything, about Hitler's activities? Anybody suggesting he went back to painting? He was a gifted artist, we know that.
Yeah, I've seen some of his paintings. As a matter of fact, when I went to visit my old friend Manfred Roeder in Germany, the room I had in Manfred's house had a Hitler original hanging on the wall.
Huh.
The guy was a good painter, good artist.
Yes, he was. All right, stand by. We'll be right back with Harry Cooper. Take a look at some pictures coming up next. You'll see. Go ahead, Harry, what?
Standing by.
Very good, sir. Back in just a minute. Okay, I'm back with Harry Cooper talking about post-World War II Argentina, where lots of interesting things were happening for sure. Enormous amounts of money coming in during the war and after the war, and this continued, I guess, for years. The two most famous unknown residents of Argentina, in all likelihood, Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun, were there living. Hitler died when?
Excuse me. We think in the early 60s, between 62 and 65.
And Eva Braun?
As of about 2000, the year 2004 or so, we had indications she might still be alive, which would not be impossible. She was born 1912, I believe, so that would have made her about 94.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an impossibility.
No, not at all. Very interesting.
So, yeah.
One wonders if those children ever went down to visit.
Have no information on that at all.
Yeah. Okay, what other sources of information from Argentina have you been able to dig up, Harry? There's, I know the story of the, we'll call him a waiter, or certainly
waitress.
A man.
Waitress.
And then there was the waitress. Well,
yeah.
We had the guy, and he was working at the one place.
Oh, yeah, the owner who sang.
The owner, okay.
Yeah. Now, let me run down the photos,
let's
okay.
Go to the photos.
Okay, yeah.
Click on photos right under Harry Cooper's name there. You'll see them. Load them up, and there's some fun pictures in there. You're having too much fun.
Yeah, I know that.
Wow.
What we're going to go over here are the previous tours down there, but we're going again in January, and I'll cover the stuff here that we'll be doing and seeing also.
Okay.
So if your listeners want to, if they want information about the tour, maybe come along with us. Just send an email to sharkhunters@earthlink.net and say you want information on the tours. And it's automatic from there. Now, the first picture, the gentleman with me there, I met him on the phone, more or less, in 2000. Now, in 1995, the Argentine newspapers were all agog with descriptions of a scuttled German U-boat in an area where Don Angel said they scuttled the boat he came over on. And I was calling Argentine admirals and everything, and they just, no, it was top secret. They wouldn't tell me about it. And then they said, no, it was a mistake. There's no submarine there. So that was the end of that. But about the year 2000, 2001, I got a call from the gentleman who's standing next to me in this photo. He had just retired from the Argentine Navy with the rank of lieutenant commander. And he said, don't give up on your search because those submarines are there.
Plural.
Yeah, we think there's more than one.
Uh-huh.
And we covered that in the second book called The Secret Alliance. He's the one wearing the powder blue shirt there in that picture. And
right.
Okay, we're both wearing powder blue shirts.
Got it.
I'm the guy with the hair. He's the guy who doesn't have any hair anymore.
Got it.
And we tour Buenos Aires, too, because it's a beautiful, I love Buenos Aires. It's a beautiful city.
Uh-huh.
That ship behind us is named Uruguay. I don't know why they'd name a ship Uruguay when they're in Argentina, but that was a warship.
Uruguay doesn't have any coastline either, does it?
Well, they've got coastline just above Argentina.
Not much. Yeah.
No. But that we tour on board that ship, and then we go by in photo number two, that's Casa Rosario, which means the pink house. We got a white house with a commie living in it.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Rose House with probably the most beautiful president in the whole world there, Cristina Kirchner. Now, that's a hell of a Spanish name, isn't it, Kirchner?
Right, came right from Tel Aviv, I think.
No. Her husband was a German.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the president. He passed away about 3-4 years ago.
She succeeded him.
Yeah, exactly. So, Eduardo, my friend from the Navy there, in photo three, he took me to the oldest bar in Buenos Aires. And then photo four and five, those are street performers right outside the hotel we use. Now,
let me go back to the oldest bar. Hold on a second. That's a pretty amazing piece of woodwork in there. And how old is that bar?
If he told me, I forgot. But it's got to be a couple hundred years old, at least, I would guess.
What is that red thing right next to you?
I think that's part of the cash register. I'm not sure.
I
had a couple of beers before, by the time I got there. I don't remember.
Yeah, but you're sober now. What is it?
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm Irish. What the heck? I don't drink anymore. I quit. But now, the corner where our hotel is like the Hollywood and Vine or State and Madison of Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm.
And the one street, Calle Florida, it's only a walking street, and that's where the most upscale shops are in all of Buenos Aires. The Louis Vuitton is there, Dooney and Burke, Botticelli, and all that. And they've got street performers, like you see in number four. This Indians from the hills are doing their dances.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, it's a tango group, and somehow they dragged yours truly in there. That's me.
They'd call it the tango group then, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. They could tango me. I just...
Well, with a hat like that, Harry, it doesn't matter.
For some reason, they always stick a hat on you down there.
Look at that.
So, we also... Now, that's... Like I say, that's right around the corner from our hotel, literally 100 yards.
Uh-huh.
Then within like 500 or 600 yards, you look at photo 6 and 7,
mm-hmm.
that is the memorial to the Malvinas War, as we know it, the Falklands War.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Eduardo, the retired Navy officer, he is also a doctor, and he's working with the surviving veterans of that war, both on the Argentine side and the British side, because the suicide rate has been incredibly high on both sides, even the Brits who won. So he's trying to work with the veterans to keep them from killing themselves.
How sad.
It is sad.
That's what war does to the human psyche.
I guess. I don't know.
Well, a lot of names on those plaques. Not like the Vietnam Memorial, but it's still another.
Yeah, and they're not quite so spit and polished as we are, but they still have their guard of honor. And you see in photo 7, they're coming to, they had the one sailor in the front, not the officer, but the other guy, he's got their flag all rolled up under his arm.
Mm-hmm.
They had retired the colors for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful park there. And like I say, it's within 500-600 yards of our hotel.
I got it.
And
right.
So, and then...
we have to take a break now, Harry. Hold on,
break.
Please.
Got
we'll do that and come right back with Mr. Cooper as we continue our little tour here of Buenos Aires. Next. Okay, talking with Harry Cooper about Argentina, and we'll get back to the Adolf Hitler stories a little bit later. We're looking at some really very beautiful pictures. What blue
right.
skies. What gorgeous blue skies. Wow.
Oh, yeah, it was the height of summer down there, which was January, which is the height of their summer down there.
Mm-hmm.
You get a sunburn pretty easy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll get us through Buenos Aires pretty quick here. From photo 8 and 9, that's out on Tigre Island, which figures historically into their history. The officers from Graf Spee were interned out on Tigre Island, and somehow they managed to escape and get back to Germany. We cover that in our magazine. You probably don't want to go into that here. Number 10 and 11 is their...
Wait a minute. Hold on. The Graf Spee
yeah.
crew, some of them, got back to Germany?
Oh, God, yeah. Most of the officers got back to Germany.
How interesting.
The few who didn't get back to Germany wound up in the spy service there. We covered that in our magazine.
Uh-huh. Well, they had to have gone by sub, right?
Not necessarily. Costa Cruise Lines was very friendly with them.
Huh.
And a lot of them got out on board cruise, passenger ships
uh-huh.
with fake names and stuff. But some of them were members of Shark Hunters. Jürgen Wattenberg, he was the navigation officer on the Graf Spee.
Wow.
He got back within 6 months and commanded a U-boat. Kurt Diggins, he was an adjutant, and he hung out with Langsdorff quite a bit for the 2-3 days Langsdorff was alive before he killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Diggins went back to Germany and became skipper of U-46. 458, and he was a member until his passing. So, yeah.
Well, they both were skippers, and they both survived.
Yeah, they were lucky. Photo 11, that's the bridge of one of the Argentine warships that got all shot to heck down there in the Falkland Islands War.
Huh.
So we tour their little museum. Then here in photo, 12, that's on the boat. We're going to take a scenic tour on their river there. It's just beautiful going past some of the mansions from the old colonial days when the Brits and mm-hmm. the Germans were there building monster-sized houses. Then, photo 13.
What river is that?
That's a branch of the Plate River.
Okay.
The Rio Plata.
Mm-hmm.
Which means Silver River. It should be called River of Mud. And we go to the cemetery, that item 13, and we visit the tomb of Evita. It's like a little house. In this whole cemetery, almost all of the people there are in tombs, not just buried with a marker, but they're in tombs. There's like a little house, maybe 10 foot by 16 feet, and a mm-hmm. door. You go in the door, which is locked, obviously. And then you can go downstairs, and the dead guy is there in a casket downstairs, and a lot of them have tables and chairs where they'll come in and they'll have something to eat while they honor their dead relative.
Huh.
So we go there, and there's another very famous person there. Old guys like me will remember. A guy's name was Luis Firpo. He was
Wait a minute, don't tell me. I know. Luis Firpo was the... Let me tell you.
Okay.
Now, how do I know this?
I don't know.
He was known as the Wild Bull of the Pampas. He was a heavyweight boxer.
You
Am
got
I right?
it. Yep.
Oh,
and
darn.
His tomb is there also.
Mm-hmm.
Then one evening we go to a place called Totino's, which is the oldest tango nightclub show in Buenos Aires. And number 14, that's the singer. And number 15, that's me with the singer.
It looks more like the singer has you.
Lucky girl. And number 16 is me with Sandra. Now, who the heck is Sandra? I don't know, but somehow I got to speaking in German, and her father and mother and she were from Brazil, and they were down there on vacation, and her father just started speaking German to me, and he was so excited. This is the first time he was able to speak German with a foreigner, and he was a veteran of the Waffen-SS.
No kidding.
And
no
his daughter, Sandra, was very excited to meet an American. So, okay.
Good stories.
Yeah, well, just friendly people down
there. All right, here's one for you. Who is probably the second most famous Argentinian heavyweight boxer?
Oh, boy, you got me there.
Alejandro Lavarante.
I could have gone 100 years and never guessed that.
Well, Muhammad Ali knocked him out.
Oh, okay. Well,
if I remember correctly.
That's not a real good way to be remembered.
It's all right.
But Ali knocked out a lot of people. He was an incredible boxer.
The best.
We go to a couple interesting areas in Buenos Aires. The next one we go to is called Las Bocas, which means the mouth. M-O-U-T-H, plural. And number 17 is, they always give you a hat down there. And number 18 is a tango dancer. Kind of wound up on me there, almost like a boa constrictor. And it's kind of the bright lights area, in daytime, but it's the fun, loose, no rules area. Then we go to an area called San Telmo, and you'll see a number 19 that's a flea market. Number 20, that guy and his wife just decided to start dancing the tango.
Oh, that was you with another woman.
No, no, it was not me. Jesus, the guy was older than me. And that's
old. Well, anyway, all right.
No, it's a guy and his wife, and they just started dancing the tango.
Yeah, it looks like they're having fun.
Having a good day, sure.
Nice, nice.
Number 21 is one of the items we saw for sale down there. If you look at it closely, which you probably can't in the photo I supplied, but it's a plaque, and it's got a German eagle holding the southern part of Argentina.
Oh,
and its talent.
It certainly is. I see it.
There's a lot of stuff for sale at that San Telmo flea market with the swastika on it. There's a lot of reproduction stuff that you can pick up for 5, 10, 20 bucks, and then there's real stuff that'll cost you healthy bucks. Number 22, that's Carlos De Napoli. He was one of the top researchers on the Third Reich in Argentina, and I met with him. I don't know, it looks like my shorts are too tight there or something. I never smile in pictures, I guess. And we were going to have dinner with De Napoli this January, you know, with our group. He was going to join us, but unfortunately he woke up dead one morning. He was a younger guy. He was like in his late 40s, early 50s, and he just had a heart attack, and that was the end of that ball game.
Wait, what was his background?
He wrote several books on the Germans in Argentina, the Nazis in Argentina.
Could that have caused his heart attack?
I think maybe, yeah, it
okay.
could.
All
you
right.
never know.
All right.
So if I have a heart attack, you know it ain't real.
Got it.
Okay, so then we get on our airplane, and we fly out to the foothills of the Andes to the village of San Carlos de Bariloche. And this was the place where a ton of guys went from the Third Reich. Photo 23 is looking out our window at that huge big lake across the street.
Right, big.
Photo 24, God knows why they got bagpipers in South America, but there he was.
Let me go back to that lake.
Yes, sir.
Now, that lake plays a very big role in our story.
It does indeed.
So I want you folks to keep that lake in mind. I don't know how many miles across that is, but it looks like 10 at least.
It's a very big lake.
Yeah.
And prior to the war, they set up, warning spots all around. There was a guy named Otto oh boy, I can't remember his last name, but he came there in the early 30s and established a ring of lookouts, I guess is the best way, all around that lake. And, you know, 5 minutes from now, Otto's last name will pop up. We visit his home, which he built himself, called the Berghof, and he's buried there. He dug his own grave. Guy was a forward-thinking fellow.
How close before his death did he dig the grave? That's the question.
That I don't know.
The night before?
I don't know. But I don't know. But he dug it, and to get to his house when he built it, it was hand over hand up the side of a mountain. Now there's a trail up there. But he was a tough guy. Mailing, that was his name, M-E-H-L-I-N-J, Otto Mailing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, we're at photo 25. Now, if that don't look like a Bavarian village, and I've been all through Bavaria, and that looks like Bavaria. Hence, I could get along with my German. Photo 26, just a nice restaurant with friendly people. Actually, they were American exchange students down there studying botany. Real exciting. Now we get into the nitty and the gritty. Photo 27. You got that, right?
Got it.
Okay, that is Erich.
We're going to stop right here.
Okay, let's
have to pause
think about
at the top. Yeah, and I'd like you all to take a look at that picture of the lake again. Just keep in mind that there were inlets and fingers that would come down into it, and we're going to talk about that as well.
Yep.
Very interesting. For you boxing fans out there, Alejandro Lavarante was Argentina's pretty boy, good-looking guy, and was ranked as high as number 3 in the world by Ring Magazine in the heavyweight division. He was offered a chance to fight, Floyd Patterson. Patterson won at $1 million. The purse was offered at $500,000, so the fight didn't happen. Lavarante was put in a coma following a September 21st, 1962 knockout loss to John Riggins in Los Angeles. He was then knocked out by Archie Moore and then Muhammad Ali, and he died in April of 1964.
Wow.
Brain damage. Too many knockouts. Okay, anyway, so there you go. Luis Firpo and Alejandro Lavarante. Anything else you want to know, don't ask me. We'll be back with Harry Cooper in just a few minutes. Okay, welcome back. Taking a leisurely, enjoyable, informative stroll with Harry Cooper. Back into history, the home of Adolf and Eva Braun after the war, believe it or not. And there are many people who believe it. I honestly wonder, and I suspect that he must have gone back to painting. He had all that time. He wasn't involved with anything. And one can only imagine how many paintings he might have done and where they are.
I have no answer for that one.
Probably unsigned.
Yeah, but still, an expert could pick up on technique.
I would think. I had, I knew a doctor who was the director of a VA hospital in the eastern part of the Atlantic seaboard, in the middle. I won't get any more specific than that.
Okay.
But he met a lot of World War II vets who are in VA hospitals now, who were and are dying. And many of them have really no family. And this particular doctor was a World War II history researcher. He loved it. And a lot of these vets would sell him their booty from the war.
Oh, yeah.
All right? There are foot lockers full of stuff all over America right now from the Third Reich. Lots of it. Well, he sold me 6 small pieces of art works done by Adolf Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
I had five of them were about, they were about 4x6. There were two watercolors, little ones, and most were pencil, drawings, and they were quite good, and they were his. And
I'll be darned.
A World War II Militaria expert talked me into letting him, have these, authenticate them and so forth, appraise them, and I never saw them again. He stole them and sold them.
That is so common, so common. One of the U-boat guys I know, who's now dead, had three huge photo scrapbooks of his time in the war,
mm-hmm.
and he loaned one to a good friend of his, and the same thing, never saw it again.
Yeah.
And never loaned that stuff out, and we have members coming back to us saying, hey, I need to buy another copy of Escape from the Bunker because I loaned mine to so-and-so, and
mm-hmm.
it's gone.
Well, so. I'm going to put the pictures of my stolen. I sued the guy and won, and he declared bankruptcy, so he wouldn't have to pay me.
A real
snake.
Anyway,
I'm going to put these pictures up on my site someday, because somewhere a collector or collectors, they have these. I mean, they were small. They were done in 1912, 13, 14,
yeah.
15, when Hitler was trying to eke out a living doing artworks in sidewalk cafes for people.
On the streets of Vienna.
That's exactly right. And, I mean, they weren't worth a lot. But they were worth, you know, something, and certainly, historically speaking, they were very interesting. So I have very good photocopies of them, fortunately. At least I have that much. But, and I have
chances are you're never going to see them again.
No, of course not.
Bummer.
Okay, yeah, well, so we live and learn. Or we live and don't learn, as the case may be.
One way or the other.
Yes, yes. Number, if you just joined us, Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. We're on tour with him on a colorful tour to Argentina. All right, now we're looking. Yep. I want you to go look at picture number 23. That's Bariloche. And that's the enormous lake there. This is a major resort now. It's down at the southern end of the country, 700 miles south of Buenos Aires, correct?
Southwest. It's up against the foothills of the Andes.
Okay. And it's an alpine area. There's skiing there and lots of stuff.
Yeah, in the winter, it's heavy skiing. In the summer, lots of fishing in that lake. The lake is called Nahuel Huapi. Nahuel is tiger. Huh. Huapi is something like a gazelle.
Huh. All right. Okay, very good. So that's number 23. So remember that lake. Okay, onward. Yeah. Where are we? Which picture?
Okay, up to this point, it's been pretty much all touristy things in Buenos Aires, et cetera. Now we get into the history.
All right, so number 26. We're looking at picture
26. 26 was some people I met there. 27.
That's all you're going to say about them, some people you met there.
That's right.
Okay.
Two botany students from the United States.
A likely story.
Right.
Okay.
Number
27.
Here's where it starts to get interesting. Remember, this is a little village 700 miles southwest of Buenos Aires in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Number 27, that's Erich Priebke. He was a captain in the SS, and war was over, no big deal. He came to this little town, Bariloche, and in 1995, I think it was, maybe you'll remember it, that idiot Sam Donaldson with the fiberglass wig went down there and more or less outed this guy. And he got hauled back to Italy, where the alleged war crime was supposed to have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Tried by a military tribunal, was found not guilty, came back, and then certain people made such a fuss that a civilian court brought him back. And he just turned 100 years old last month, and he's in life in prison and house arrest in Rome. But he was a Waffen-SS officer.
Mm-hmm.
And photo 28, that was his store in Bariloche. He had a butcher shop.
Huh.
And there were tons of SS down in that area.
Big coup for Sam the man, huh?
Yeah, that idiot. I never liked him anyhow.
No, pompous as they get.
Oh, yeah. We'll be down there in January this year. So, like I say, if any of your listeners want to get information about that, or if they want to get information about joining Shark Hunters, just send an email to sharkhunters@earthlink.net, and We'll send them a complimentary issue of our magazine electronically and any information they want.
You have so much material on shark hunters. It's amazing. Sharkhunters.com. DVDs, books, and many more to come. I mean, you could probably spend the rest of your life producing DVDs on the material you have.
Yeah, and books, too. I do that in my spare time.
Right, sure. I know that game. Okay.
Yeah, I'm usually in my office by 3 in the morning, and I go until about 6 at night.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I still have to come home because I got 2 young children I'm raising.
Yeah.
So now we switch over to number 29 and 30. The one circled in number 29 is the photo in 30. That's the old German school, and in 29, the big white building is the new German school, where Priebke was the headmaster.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was also the head of the German Cultural Center there.
Is that where Donaldson captured him?
Yeah, that's it.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Makes me sick.
Yeah.
That's not journalism.
No, it sure isn't. It's a National Enquirer type.
Yeah.
But there were lots of SS down there. And every 20th of April, which was Hitler's birthday, they'd get together in this upscale five-star, five-diamond resort just outside of town a little ways and have a big shindig on Hitler's birthday. But then after Sam Donaldson showed up, they stopped that for obvious reasons.
Hmm.
Now we look at the photo 31. That's a book that a guy named Abel Basti wrote. And Abel Basti is probably the best researcher on the Third Reich in Argentina, because he lives in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
And we switch to photo 32, and that's Basti on the far right, me on the left. And this is the restaurant you were talking about, where when we got there, the owner, who was close to 80 years old, I guess, 6'2", blue-eyed, blonde hair. He didn't speak English. I don't speak Spanish. And he was explaining the specials of the day to my buddies in Spanish, and they were explaining them to me in English, and it wasn't working. So just on a hunch, I said, bitte mein Herr, ich möchte eine Speisekarte mit englischer Schreiben, and please, sir, like an English menu. And just right away, he came back, oh, mein Freund, haben Sie nicht? My friend, we don't have one. And we talked for about 2 minutes in German. And I said, du sprichst ein gut Deutsch, warum? You speak good German, why? Oh, ich bin Schweizer, I'm Swiss.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So later in the evening, he was playing music, a Schifferklavier, which is like an accordion, but with buttons instead of keys.
Now, this is you're sitting at the same table or a different table in the same restaurant when this happened?
Oh, same. What, same table? What do you mean, same table?
I mean, that's the restaurant where this happened.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, is that
right
the
there.
Same table you were sitting at?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, really?
Enjoy.
Was this picture taken on the day of this encounter you're describing?
That's correct.
Oh, all right. Very
good.
So
anyhow, he was playing a Schifferklavier, and his buddy, a little short, swarthy Argentine guy, was playing a guitar, and they were singing gaucho songs. And I went over and asked him if he could play the Matrosenlied, which is the song, it's called a sailor song, and that's the song the U-boaters would sing and play as they're heading out of port to go into combat. No, no, he says, I don't know that song. Okay, fine. So he's back playing gaucho song. I'm eating some great Argentine steak. And suddenly we hear, he went through the entire Matrosenlied, and then he goes, of Sturmoderschneid, the Panzerlied, the song of the armored divisions. He went through that too. And when he got done, we smiled at each other. I gave him a thumbs up. He stood up, stuck his right arm in the air, and clicked his heels together.
Amazing.
Yeah. We came back the following year, and I had in my group, there were two hardcore right-wing Nazis from Germany.
Uh-huh.
One was only about 50, was not a veteran. The other one, it was not a veteran of the war either, but he was older, and he was a retired full colonel of the German army, Bundeswehr, and he had just finished a year in prison because he was criticizing their policies. These two guys had the poor guy that run the restaurant there until 2 o'clock in the morning singing all the old party songs, but he was only Swiss, right?
Sure.
So Now, photo 33 doesn't require any conversation or description. That was taken on the 20th of April, some years after the war. Some people just having a party. So, now we move on out of Bariloche. And as you pointed out, the lake is very important. We switched to photo 34. We're coming up to an island in the lake. The island is called Huemel, H-E-U-M-E-L. And it was the site of a German nuclear research laboratory that was built in 1947, 2 years after the end of the war, by German scientists with the full help and protection of Montperron. Right across the from the island to the mainland, which was like a quarter of a mile at that point, that's where Perón built his Army Mountain Troop School so he could keep track of the island.
Mm-hmm.
If you look closely at 34, you can see a sunken boat there and a dock.
Yeah,
and you look at 35, you see what happens when the Germans aren't there to take care of the dock and the Argentinians don't. I fell through the dock and I still got pieces of wood stuck in my arm. Then we start walking down this little path, and it's just like an Indiana Jones movie, 36, 37. You look through the brush, and there are buildings, deserted buildings. 38 is one of them. 39, that's another deserted building in the laboratory. It has been written, and I believe accurately, that the laboratory here under Dr. Ronald Richter did achieve a cold fusion reaction that only went on for a few seconds, but everybody is still trying to get cold fusion, and it ain't working. You have to have intense heat. That was my career field in the Air Force on every hydrogen bomb, which is... what the heck you call that? That's the fusion part. You have to have a small atomic bomb in the back end of this bomb to create the intense heat to trigger the crush area up front with the deuterium and the tritium. And it was supposed to be a secret. This was supposed to be all under, and this is in our book, The Secret Alliance. Borman wanted to keep all this quiet, but Juan Perón wanted to show that he was a nuclear power, and he made a big whoop-de-doo about this in the early 1950s, 52, 3, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So very quickly, under Borman's orders, they shut down the atomic laboratory, and Richter went somewhere else to do something else. We go to 40, that's the reactor building. All the other buildings are still standing, but the reactor building was blown up.
Why? The Perón government?
I'm guessing that was the case. I don't know, but I'm guessing either that or Richter's people to make sure anything there didn't lend credence to any other stories.
Wonder if a Geiger counter would be of interest there.
We didn't have one the first time around, but we did have one the second time around.
Mm-hmm.
And these things in 41, those are cooling coils or some such thing, and they're solid. They're solid metal, steel, I'm guessing. Since we were so close to them, we were wondering if we were going to glow in the dark, but we came back with the Geiger counter the next year, 2009, and came up with zero rating. So we're not going to die too quickly.
No, not from that anyway. All right.
No, no, not from that.
Maybe
only
from falling through a dock, but...
Yeah, or having a strange car crash or something
great.
Those things happen.
Yeah, well, we know. We'll talk more about that in future programs. Okay.
Right.
41, the round items, we don't know what they were. 42, now this is a big story, folks. Remember the big lake. Okay.
Right. So now we're on our way to visit the estate where Hitler and Eva Braun lived from 1945 until 1955. If you're coming from one direction, now remember, his estate was way up at the end of a finger of this lake. And if you're coming from one direction, you'll pass this tower, which is still there. They had a platoon of people there, and their job was just to watch. And if somebody was coming past them, they would radio to the estate and say, hey, there's somebody coming. And if you were coming from the other way, the other direction, you see in number 43 and 44, there was a small bunker. This was not one of the monster bunkers that they had the U-boats in with the 20-meter thick roof, no, 7-meter thick roof. Mm-hmm. This was just a regular structure that also would house a platoon, and their function was to be eyes and look out and notify the estate if somebody was coming from that direction.
Now that's on the other side of the finger?
Right.
Okay.
And in, I think, 1960, it was blown up as a military exercise by the Argentine Army. I don't know.
Pretty dumb.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can get down inside it, and there's room still inside. Mm-hmm. We got hundreds and hundreds more photos on the website. So if your listeners go to sharkhunters.com,
mm-hmm.
click on previous tours, they can spend all day there.
Okay, so here we go. We've got a finger on this enormous lake. At
yep.
Bariloche
yep.
in 1945, 46, we've got these installations that you've seen there, and one of them was clearly a watchtower, and the other was a manned bunker with obviously some troops of some
yep.
kind in there, and they probably weren't Argentinian.
Oh no, they were not.
Yeah, so. Okay, then nobody's down there at this time. This is way out in the middle of nowhere. I mean,
right.
It is really remote.
And
okay.
We've also found that there were armed security patrols by Germans, foot patrol around the lake, and also boat patrol on the lake after the war was over. And if you look at 44, that's me looking like the hood ornament on a 1948 Hudson.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Pointing in the direction of the estate.
Except you're supposed to be a woman.
Well, I guess...
Maybe next time. All right.
Yeah, if they didn't have the money to hire somebody pretty...
That's pretty good.
So,
that's pretty good. All right. Okay, so you're pointing at the estate.
Pointing at
right
the direction,
there.
Yeah, because it's
yeah.
several miles from
I
there.
Got
it's
it.
A huge lake.
All right.
And the estate, as we talked about earlier, was built toward the end of World War II in the closing moments by Argentine Mercedes money, Mercedes uh-huh. of Argentina.
So here's Mercedes of Argentina spending a lot of money,
yep.
700 miles from civilization to build
yeah.
this beautiful estate on a very small finger on this enormous lake.
Yep.
And they cleared the trees away and built this beautiful, beautiful edifice, and when we get
yeah.
closer, we'll see it. You can see it in 45 and 46. All right, at distance, this is the approach to it, right?
Correct. Yeah, you run your boat up on the beach.
You had to go straight on to get in there.
Right.
Okay.
And as I told you earlier, as we were walking up the lawn, you had to go about 100 yards from the beach up there. When we
mm-hmm.
came back in 2009, I had to rent two small cabin cruisers to take my troops out there, and this one boat captain who was about 60 years old had never been out of Bariloche. He puts his left index finger under his nose like a little mustache, puts his right arm up in the air, and he's goose-stepping. I asked him, what in the hell are you doing? And he said, I know who lived here. And I said, you're only 60. How could you know that? And he said his father was the caretaker, and he lived there from the time he was a child, and he again, put the finger under his nose and the right arm in the air, and he says, I know who lived here.
He was right in front of the house he was doing that?
Yeah, and then he went goose-stepping off.
And he lived there as a child?
Right. There are quite a few outbuildings, as you'll see when you go
so
to the website.
So he saw Hitler, obviously, for years.
Right. But he didn't say that. He just said, I know who lived here, and went goose-stepping off with his right arm in the air.
All right.
So we're going to nail him down.
He's still there.
Oh yeah.
This is amazing. Come on. Hold on, folks. Let me ask Harry another question here.
Yeah.
Harry, this is a major motion picture, or at least a book. This guy.
Yeah, we're going back to sit down with a microphone and talk to him in January.
And he's got to know that his name won't go anywhere. I mean, you'll know that, and
right.
You know how the game's played. You've got to get this information from the guy. I know you will. I know it's probably eating you up inside. This is extraordinary.
You're not kidding. You know, I'd love to have $10,000-$15,000 sitting on my table in front of me here that I could go back down there with a film crew and talk to this guy, but that.
Well, listen, hold on. Here's what you do.
Okay.
How many people live in Bariloche? How big of a town?
Oh.
50,000?
Probably closer to 10, 15.
All right. Somewhere in that town, there will be a professional digital movie-making cameramen and women. There'll be people that do this. They go out and do weddings. They go out and do all kinds of things.
Okay.
You get right on site, probably $20 a day, $30 a day, and they'll record all day long for you. So don't worry about taking a crew down there. Just get somebody with a tripod that knows how to operate a digital camcorder and take them with you.
I was chuckling there a little bit because my friend Nahuel is not only a guide and translator, he is also a photojournalist.
Well, there's your answer right there.
But your $20 to $30 a day, oh, God, I wish it worked. He cost me $100.50 a day.
Well, you got to find somebody else that'll do it for less and who will obviously appreciate the potential historical significance of what they're doing.
Right.
Well,
we've been having talks with a senior producer of one of the major TV channels, which I'm not going to go any further into that.
No. And all right.
We may be going down there with a major film crew.
Well,
but somebody else will pay for it.
Hopefully the guy won't get scared and run.
Well, I don't think he will. He looked pretty forward thinking, and you know, we'll duke him a few bucks and buy him some beers.
Okay, all right. I'm counting on you. This is big stuff.
I'm counting on me too. I hope.
Okay.
Now, the layout of this.
Hold on, we got to do a little business here. Just a second, we'll come right back.
Okay.
Look at the house, folks. Look at the approach. Look at the design. Can you say Bavarian German architecture? Okay. Hold on, we'll be right back. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, back to one tonight. What you are seeing, if you're watching, is in all likelihood the residence of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun after the war of 1945 to 1955. If you missed the early part of the program, Martin Bormann drugged the two of them and had them removed from the bunker, essentially against at least his will, and taken out of there. Very interesting story. I wonder, Harry, if in the German community after the war at the higher levels, it was known that he had been taken out and approximately where he was. It must have been.
Yeah, some people knew about it. Others clung to the old Wagnerian theme that he was in his shining armor on his white horse at the head of their, you know, and died at the head of his troops, etc., and that just didn't happen. He wound up down here in Bariloche until 1955 and then moved up to Cordoba when the place got discovered as a tourist attraction. You'll notice in photo 47 there, the sign coming onto the property that says No Pasar. And if you understand Spanish, you know that means shark hunters are welcome here.
Got it.
The same in Germany where it says Ein Gang verboten. It means shark hunters are welcome. You look in the book, Escape from the Bunker, and you can visualize all the buildings as Don Angel describes them. It fits this whole complex because there are guest houses around there, like 49. 48 is a little house that's got the generator in it because the place was self-sufficient. And, number 50 is a seaplane ramp that was built back in the 40s.
Wow.
Yeah. So this place was self-sufficient, and it was very secure, and that's where he was.
Look at the approach. Look how the vegetation is thick right down to the water's edge. You don't walk through that easily at all.
We're darn sure.
Yeah.
Now, we finish up our time there, and we'll be doing this again in January for our group that goes
So they're going. You're going to go in January back to the estate, back to this house. Okay.
Yes, sir. Everything I've showed you so far, we're going back, except we're not going to have dinner with DiNapoli because he's dead.
Got it. Who's allowed to go to the estate? Do you have to apply for special? Shark hunters are always welcome, but anybody else probably not as easily.
Well, nobody's welcome. I mean, it's no passar means no passage. Stay out.
Yeah.
This is what you call guerrilla journalism, like guerrilla warfare. We just show up.
Mm-hmm.
But I have now found, I've located the man who owns that estate. He lives in Buenos Aires. He's trying to sell it for 40 million Yankee dollars. It'll still be there 1,000 years from now waiting to be sold.
Yeah.
But I'll contact him and try to do it properly. Doesn't matter. We're only on the property for like an hour.
There must be caretaker there, huh?
No caretaker.
You just walked in?
Yeah, right. So if there is a caretaker, somebody who lives somewhere else, and he just comes once a week maybe to mow the grass or something like that.
Very interesting.
So
we had a picture inside before.
Oh, yeah, that's on the website.
Yeah.
They're just, Jeff, there are hundreds and hundreds of photos, and I had to make some kind of decision how to cut it down.
Of course.
Yeah, because when I worked for the mafia years and years ago, for a very short time, I learned how to pick locks. So I got inside and took photos inside beds, tables. Did Hitler sleep here? Did Hitler eat at this table?
Well, that table I remember is enormous, and obviously it's not something you pick up with two people and move around.
It's heavy
table.
Wood.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
See, that place could turn into a shrine, and that's something the government doesn't want. So this is.
Well, the German government doesn't want it. I don't know if the Argentine government really cares. Now the Andes, as we've discussed before, is a great place for skiing and in the wintertime, but before it was discovered, you know who is Otto Skorzeny?
Sure.
The top Green Beret before there ever was such a thing for the German army, and also Hans Ulrich Rudel, the one-legged Stuka pilot.
Yeah.
We've seen pictures of them skiing in the Andes in this area. So why did they come here to go skiing when they could have stayed home and skied in the Bavarian Alps? Well, because they came to visit Hitler.
I'm How fascinating.
Believing. So we wrap up our time here, 51 and 52. We have a trail ride. We start there. That guy in the forefront of the picture with the white hat and the green sweater, that's the old colonel that just got out of prison in Germany. He just got out just before we went.
Right, I'm missing the picture. White hat.
51.
Okay, it's kind of gray. It's not white.
Sitting on a white horse.
All right, I got you. Yeah,
yeah, he's the colonel that had just gotten out of 1 year prison in Germany because he said unkind things about their government.
I see.
They don't like that over there.
Well, it's not the German government anymore, as we all know.
So the circled area on 52, that's the mesa that we rode to, and we rode through all sorts of ecosystems, the flat pampas, and then we're going up through rainforest, and then up onto the high plateau where they've got kind of a line shack up there, and we had a barbecue up there. Fantastic, and it's one of the few nesting places in South America for the Andes condor, and we could see these things with their 12-foot wingspread just loafing around up in the air there.
Now, wait, that item you have circled in red looks for all the world like buildings. I mean,
it's a mesa.
I understand, but look at the angles on that. They're remarkable.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I never noticed it that way before, but trust me, it's a mesa.
Yeah.
And as I told you last time, I got halfway up there. My horse and I were not the best of friends, and that damn thing pitched me. And I went about 10 feet in the air. Come down on my back.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're tough.
Well, I got up, I smacked him on the nose and told him we're not going to do this again, like he understood. And everybody thought I was so brave because I got back on the horse and rode the rest of the way up. Well, look how far it is. I ain't going to walk that on foot.
No.
So, but I did come back down with the others in a truck. because it was getting dark and it was getting cold.
You earned it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Then we come back from here.
Uh-huh.
We come back to Buenos Aires for a few days to see some more of the sites, etc. Then we go to Cordoba, which is about 400 miles northwest of Buenos Aires.
Okay, and so from 700 miles southwest, we go 700 miles and then 400 more. That's 1,100 miles.
Right.
That's quite a jump in locations. Cordoba in 1955 would have been a small town or bigger.
You mean in 1945?
No, because he went there.
Well, 55 when he moved up there.
He went there in 55.
Cordoba is the province, but the county seat, so to speak, is the town of Cordoba.
Okay.
It must have been small back then. I don't know.
Okay.
But
so we believe he moved up there in 55 and lived there until he passed. Okay.
That's correct. Which would be between 1962 and 65.
All right.
And I think I mentioned before that we were taking the bus overnight. And when I first was taking a bus in Argentina, I had visions of the bus in the movie Romancing the Stone, where you had to kick the pigs and chickens out of the way, and it was just an old beat-up. No, these things are like airliners without wings. Single row of seating down one side, double row down the other side, and you got a stewardess on board, and she'll run you. I guess they had drinks on board. I don't know, but they had coffee. They had tea. And then she'll bring you your dinner. And meanwhile, the bus is buzzing down the road in the middle of nowhere. That picture 53 is what you see for 400 miles. And then when the sun goes down, you fold your seat back, not just like on an airliner that goes back a notch or two. This thing lays down into a bed. She brings you a pillow and a blanket and asks you what you want to drink when you wake up.
Really?
And then all the lights go out and the bus keeps humming on down the road. And come daybreak, the lights come on in the bus again. You give the gal back the pillows and blankets, put your seat back in the upright position, and she comes around with breakfast. Oh, it's high-tech, man.
Wow. No airplanes. So, you take the bus.
That's it. And photo 54.
That's the bus terminal in Cordoba?
That's correct. It looks just like an airline terminal. So, and then 55, that was our hotel. It was a very nice hotel. And we learned, though, you get a surprise if you turn on the water tap that says C when you expect cold water, because C means caliente, which is hot. And F is fría, so I guess that's the cold. Now, here is where we get really into heavy history. Photo 56, that's the Hotel Eden. And it had been in existence from around the 1900s. And the people who owned it, the Eichhorn family, which means acorn, were very big supporters of Adolf Hitler. They donated a ton of money to him when he was running for politics. And after he became chancellor, now this hotel was the only place in most of Argentina where you could pick up the overseas radio broadcast, and people would come. There's photos on the website. Hundreds of people would line the courtyard, which you see in photo 57, to listen to Hitler's speeches on the overseas radio. There's photos on the website of the black and white photos of that courtyard just jammed, overflowing with people listening to Hitler speak.
Fascinating.
And I don't know if you can see it very well in photo 58, but that was an FBI document that says they knew Hitler was down there and that the Eichhorns were supporting him. That's reproduced a little better in our book, and we've got quite a few.
This is September 17th, 1945.
45, yeah.
So the Eichhorns were supporting him from the time he got to Argentina.
Yeah, and the FBI knew it.
And ultimately, when he moved up to Cordoba, that's apparently where the Eichhorn family lived?
Right, they owned that hotel.
Okay.
So, this hotel is now abandoned, because the Eichhorn family, you know, they're all dead, and the place is owned by the state, and they want to try to renovate it, but it takes a lot of money, and they don't have much money down there. Then there's another hotel, Photo 59, Vienna, and a Grand Hotel Vienna. And I thought they misspelled it, but in Spanish, Vienna only has one N. And the Spanish words below it translate to a mystery by the sea. Now, this hotel, you see it in 60 and 61, it's gone to hell. I mean, it's toast. But it was built right on the edge of another very large lake, this one up in Cordova, and I think it's a salt lake, I'm not sure. But all of a sudden, for whatever reason, snow melt, who knows, act of God, the lake rose and rose and rose and suddenly filled the entire first floor up to the ceiling. Well, you can't very well live there. But this hotel was also built in late 44, early 45 with German money, and it had air conditioning, it had elevators, and it had a plastic surgery clinic. So you fill in the blanks.
Wow. Blanks. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and also if you look at 62, it had a 100 meter high lookout tower. Why would you need a lookout tower for a hotel out in the middle of nowhere?
Looking out over a lake, which is now empty.
Right. The lake has receded. The lake is still there, but it's way far away. But this hotel is finished.
Got it.
Now, if you walk into the hotel, which we did, almost got arrested for it. This time, they were serious about that no pasar. But 63 is the bed. But 64, 65, 66, and 67, these are all pictures still hanging on the wall. And these are all scenes of German villages, German cities. And this was on the Hotel Vienna in Cordova, I forget what town it was in, but Cordova province. And then 68, it just shows that we ate well up there.
Mm-hmm.
But you look what we're eating, sauerkraut, bratwurst, and beer. It's not your typical Argentine food.
Huh.
This was in the town Villa General Belgrano, and this is where most of the enlisted men from the Drafts Bay were relocated after the war. They didn't get out. The officers did, but the enlisted men were relocated to this, was a little town at the time. And they built their own complex out there. They had their own barracks, their own everything. And the town has heavy German roots, I guess, because... the hotels and many of the restaurants, they have all a German theme, the Bavaria restaurant, the New Bavaria Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to buy souvenirs for my wife and kids, and I went into a little gift shop. The guy didn't speak English, so I asked him if he spoke German. Sprechen Sie Deutsch? Oh, no, momentito, senor, por favor. And he gets on the phone, and about 5 minutes later, this young guy, about 30 years old, tall, blue eyes, blonde hair, straight white teeth, good-looking Aryan kid. He comes running in to help me buy stuff for my family, and it turns out his grandfather was a lieutenant general in the SS who was an adjutant to General Panzermeier. So they're there. So now we come to the unknown part. Look down to...
Okay, we have about 7 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you set it however you think I need to speed up or slow down. The rest of the photos, I can't tell you exactly what they are because I haven't been there yet. We're going to go there. And there's a few other places that I don't have photos of on here that we can talk of to fill the gap. But this is an area, excuse me, also in the Cordova province, out in the middle of nowhere, which is even more remote than most of the area. And this is an estate where one of my advance guys was there and took these photos for us. And you had to go through that tunnel which is what, photo
79
and 70, right. 69 is at the end of that road, 70 is a close up of it. And that was the only way onto the estate, apparently. And that's where the guys had to go that were escaping from Germany. That's where they had to go to get their new papers, their new identities, etc. You can see in the other photos, 72, 73, etc. The swimming pool is abandoned.
It's an enormous pool.
Yeah, I would say. But I guess if you got a ton of money, you can build anything you want.
A lot of people apparently moving through there.
Right, and I don't know who owned the estate, but we're going to find out. We're going back there. We're going to that place. Can't go back because we haven't been there yet. But we're going to go there, and I'm going to be talking to some of the neighbors, find out what's going on. So this is, you know, walking in the footsteps of history. And again, if any of your listeners want to go with us, all they have to do is send us an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net, say, hey, send me information, and we'll get it to them.
That, that estate looks like a major processing center for expatriate Germans.
Right. And but I got to find out when it was built.
Yeah, yeah.
Who owned it? Who paid to build it? Who staffed it? When did it go empty? And why? I mean, you just don't walk away from an estate unless, you know, unless you're backed by money that isn't yours.
And the purpose has been finished.
Exactly.
Fulfilled. That's not a tourist destination either. Wow.
No, that's not a tourist destination. That's out in the middle of nowhere. So those, all this is what we will be doing on our next tour down there, our patrol, as we call them, in January of 2014. So it, I think the way we're going to do it, I haven't finalized it yet. I think what we're going to do is have two separate and distinct patrols. The first one, we'll land in Buenos Aires, and we'll see the sites, and then we'll go to Bariloche and see all that there, the atomic research laboratory, Hitler's home, et cetera, et cetera. Then we come back to Buenos Aires, which we have to do anyhow, and we'll have maybe 4 days there of sightseeing, which will be the end of the first tour. And then the beginning of the second tour. So people who are on the first tour, if they want to stay on for the second tour, they've saved the airfare. Or people only want to see the first tour, then they go home. And then the second tour group comes out about the same in the middle of that 4 days and sees Buenos Aires. And then we go to Cordova. And then we'll come back from Cordova after probably a week and see more sites in Buenos Aires, and then it's over. There are a couple other things that I'm staying on to look at. Two very interesting things that I'm not going to get into right now. I don't want to have a car wreck.
That's not a joke either.
No,
there,
I know.
There's some people who don't want this information out there.
I know it.
And it's all, let me just say something. It's all speculation, folks. All right? You make up your own minds.
Keep Harry alive, right?
Yeah. The waitress issue is another one.
That's the other one. Catalina. And we haven't been able to sit down and interview her yet, but my contact down there knows how to contact her. And when this was, I think, in 2004, one of the researchers down there talked to her on the phone, and because she had waited on Hitler and Eva Braun at one of these hotels up in Cordova, and he asked if he could come and interview her, and she said, fine, I've got pictures I'll show you, etc. So he drove about 1,000 kilometers or miles or whatever, gets to her door, and she said, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you. They said that I must not speak to you or show you any pictures while the lady is still living. So they, I guess, would be what we know as Odessa, which the Germans called Die Spinne, the spider.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady in question, I'm guessing, would have meant Eva Braun.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2004, like I said, she could still be alive. She was born 1918.
Right. Sure.
I'm sorry, 1912.
Mm-hmm.
So by 2004, it'd have only been, what, 94, 95 years, something like that. That's not impossible.
Wow. Well, there's only one lady. It wouldn't be Eva Perón.
No, I don't think so. Because, you know, by 2004, Eva Perón was long dead.
Interesting first name coincidence.
Yeah, I never thought of that. Eva Perón and Eva Braun, Hitler. So, you know, there is so much to be learned. And I'm, as I said, we're going over to South Germany and Austria this September, which we do every year. This year is filled up, but next year we got room if any of your listeners want to go. But I'm staying on one more week because there was a section, province or whatever you call it, called Thuringen, which was where you get the Thuringen sausages. But that was the most secret part of the Reich. This is where Germany had their atomic research laboratory. This is where they hollowed out a mountain and were
underground.
Building.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were building ME-262 jet fighters inside this mountain.
Can you still get in there? I know you can, but...
I'll find out.
Yeah. Well,
Some friends of ours went over there a few years ago, and they photographed... there's a big fence around the mountain factory thing. But instead of Eingang verboten, which I disregard, it says Achtung Minengefahr, danger, minefield. So I'm bringing my white metal detector over there, White's metal detector, and if there's any mines, I'll hopefully go around them.
All right, you better. Now, this is great. We're out of time, Harry. Thank you very much again for this walk back and so many doors to go through. Wow.
Every time we answer one question, we get 10 more popping up.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're on the verge of putting together some very, very important pieces of history, and I hope you can do it. I hope the caretaker's son will talk. I hope maybe the old waiter will talk. I hope the waitress will talk. If you have to record them from the backside, that's fine. Just shoot the back of their head. You know, whatever it takes.
Backlight them to where you can't see anything but
whatever.
A silhouette.
Sure. All right, my friend. Thank you. Fascinating, Harry.
My pleasure.
Very much appreciated. Talk to you soon.
All right. Good deal. Thanks, Jeff. Good night.
Good night. Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. That's our program tonight. We'll be right back with you on Sunday night, and then next week as we move right into the last full week in July already. Take good care, and we'll talk soon.